Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Yeah, as I was about to say. Hello and welcome to episode 139 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my... Coughing? Oh, you're not coughing now. Pal Sean Orford, are you alright?
I'm very good. I just had a good cough. So.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah, well, I know.
Why is it... I'm going to say, why is it that when you turn the microphone on, you need to cough?
I don't know. Just getting in the
zone, aren't you? It's a reflex action,
It's like getting yourself prepared for the day. Some people cough, some people have a little meditation session. That's what we're going to talk about. We're talking about mindfulness today, aren't we? And
yeah.
Relaxation, meditation, the differences, and then kind of benefits
of
this thing, mindfulness. It just won't go away, will it?
Well, mindfulness has become big business. When I was first introduced to mindfulness years ago, when I first started meditating and doing things, and mindfulness actually comes from a word called sati. Which is a Pali word, which is what most Buddhist stuff is written in Pali. And now I hear mindfulness in everyday sense, you know, the government even. We'll get around to that.
But we're going to come to all that stuff. How are you doing now? All well?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Many years ago, 33 years ago, I had a little boy that died, and it's just coming up to... that time of year.
33 years ago?
Yeah.
He died in, straight after birth?
Yeah, not long after birth, yeah. And he died on my birthday, which is a good one. And that all comes together. And so I this time of year, I've always got that... It's not like a thing that wrecks my life or tears me apart or anything. Over the years, it's processed out. I used to think that you get over things like this, but you don't actually. They're just a part of the tapestry of who you are.
Would you want to get over it, or do you quite?
I'm quite happy.
Like the memory, but you know what I mean.
I'm okay with the memory. I'm okay with it being a part of life. So
what was the initial immediate memory?
Oh, that was difficult. I mean, it was all tough to start off with. But the thing is that it's like going through that period of time. It's a 48-hour period that I do each year, and it's okay. I'm just aware of things that happened, and I go through that 48 hours, and then life's kind of normal again afterwards. But I used to think naively that in bereavement these things go away. But anybody who's been in deep bereavement knows that it doesn't. It just becomes a part of who you are.
Funny creatures, we're humans, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. And the weird thing is, isn't... that it's here, because it's not here yet, but I can just feel myself kind of winding. It just comes into my awareness. So it does come into my meditations, in fact.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, beautiful. Yeah, I haven't got anything in response to that that's anywhere as deep and meaningful.
How's your life doing? What have you been doing?
Yeah, I've just been cycling around, going here, there, and everywhere, meeting people, saying hello.
Yeah.
It's all good.
You know, you were talking about being able to cycle to Liverpool.
Oh, yeah.
Can you actually cycle down and put your bike on the train and come through on the train?
I could do. Yeah, quite a few people do that. There's space at the end carriages, I think. But I don't have far to walk from the station to get to my office here from Moorfields.
Yeah, that's station. True, yeah.
So for the all the... Because it'd be a hassle getting upstairs and then up the escalators to park it, you know.
Yeah.
A quarter of a mile from the station.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm better just parking it in the station on the Wirral side and that.
And just, yeah.
But we were talking about, and maybe I should email my MP or councillor or something, some way that cyclists could get from the Wirral to Liverpool for free, you know, because we can't cycle through the tunnel, although we have looked into it. You're allowed to cycle through the Mersey Tunnel, apparently, after 11 p.m. and I think before 7 a.m.
Yeah.
Which
means you're probably drunk then. If you get a cycle through the tunnel.
Which would be cool. It'd be good cycling through there. I mean, I don't know, air quality-wise, what it's like in there.
There are fans on there that are pumping the air around.
Yeah. If there was some way I could get across, because, you know, it's not that far from...
They do a run through the tunnel,
do it in half an hour.
Each year. I mean, obviously there's no cars, but they...
Yeah, there's like a half marathon or a 10K.
Yeah.
It's 10K that... And they open it up for like to walk through as well once a year, I think, as well.
But the thing about the tunnel is it goes down and then it comes up. It must be a long haul coming back up, I would think.
Actually, I'll bet on the way up, if you're cycling, it'd be a bit of a slog. I think it's 3 miles, the Mersey Tunnel, the Queen's Way one, is it?
Right. But if you were running too, I think it would be like a long pull up, that long slope.
We need to look into that. Anyway, I find cycling relaxing. Well, except when I'm going uphill.
Yeah.
But let's talk about a listener who well, not talk about the listener, but a listener emailed in. I think it was Lee. Wanted to know, or just to get us to chat about mindfulness, relaxation, and meditation, and the differences between the three, and when they coalesce and when they're separate things altogether, I guess.
Yeah.
So they're all different things, aren't they?
Yeah. And one of the problems that you're going to get is that when you talk to different people, you're going to get different definitions, because people mean different things by the same word.
So this is the Sean Orford.
Yeah, so I'm being... it's my training, initially Eastern training, and then the Westernised stuff. The distinctions are very clear, and you can use each part of the process in different ways. So I can try and explain that. The issue about being mindful means to be aware of yourself in the moment. And you can be aware of yourself in the moment and never having meditated in your life. So it doesn't follow that to be mindful you need to meditate. However, it is true that if you meditate, you can't avoid being mindful. You know, it's one of those. Yeah. And there are many people who are very aware of who they are and where they are, and the effect that they have on people and the universe around them, who've never meditated. And to be mindful, to live in the moment, to be present to yourself in the moment, does not require meditation. But if you meditate, inevitably you develop mindfulness.
Okay.
Yeah. But if you look at the process, people sit down to meditate. So what happens? Well, the first part of meditation is relaxation. So you sit down and you focus on your body. The way I was trained is that we did what was called a composure. So we do top head, tips of the toes, and you focus in and you relax your body. If there are any particular points of tension, you do a bit of work on those to take the tension out. And indeed, what we see as yoga over here, which is actually only one branch of 8 branches of yoga, which is Hatha yoga, heads down, bums up, exercise, initially was about how do you take the tension out of your body so that you can sit and meditate. That's what it was for.
Okay.
Yeah. So that, but we say it's an exercise now, right? So that if you go to a good yoga class, at the end of the yoga class, there will be a meditation, because that's why you went there.
Yep.
Yeah. So the first part of the process is to relax your body. You sit down, you relax. So relaxation is the first bit. But we're going down, like going down into a tunnel, going further down. So like the next bit is contemplation. So I've relaxed my body and I might start to contemplate my breath. I might start to contemplate things and issues. Now, I use this technique if I'm writing something. So what I would do is I'll sit down as though I'm meditating. I will go through the relaxation, and then I will move on to contemplate what it is that I'm going to do, what I'm going to write.
Do you do that for your blog posts each week then?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll contemplate what I'm doing. But say I'm going to go and do a conference and I'm delivering a lecture or a talk or something. Then I will sit down and contemplate what it is I'm going to do, so that by the time I've got there, I've already done it. And that contemplation is the visualized process. Now, that visualization as part of relaxation becomes the kind of thing that you do in sports psychology.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're trying to get people to get the perfect swing on their golf club, where you get them to visualise doing it. So you get them to sit down, they do a bit of relaxation to allow themselves to be able to focus in, to contemplate and visualise what they're going to do next.
Right.
But I'd use the same technique if I was going to get someone to go for an interview. So they visualise the interview before they get there.
Cool.
Yeah. And there are many, many people who will use that kind of technique in creativity, whether they're scientists, artists, journalists, authors, whatever. They will take that time out to contemplate what's going to happen before they do it.
So, okay.
Yeah?
Well, yeah, I'm trying to think what my process is. It's quite haphazard a lot of the time, but yeah, no, I mean, you know, I'll get a job in for, let's say, some branding, logo design, and what have you. usually I'd work with quite quick turnaround stuff. You know, it's like I need it tomorrow or yesterday. But yeah, I won't. I mean, I don't just sit at my desk and then just start. It just happens. What will tend to happen is that by the time I'm sitting at my desk, I'll know what I'm going to do in terms of what the idea.
You're skipping a step for us listening to it. It's like, what is it, the process that you go through that gets you into the seat, that gets you to know what you're going to do when you sit in the seat?
Well, I mean, you know, I come to the seat by default just because, you know, I'm...
But what's the emotional cognitive process that's going on?
I guess it would be tricky to explain, but I use my little downtime in life, whether it's when I'm drifting off to sleep, or you know, getting ready for bed, or whether I'm just on my commute to and from work, I'll be thinking about the job then, and visualizing it in my head. And then by the time I get to my desk the next day or later that morning, I know what to do straight away. I don't have to kind of think as I'm searching for fonts, looking for shapes and colors and logos. I already know before I start working.
Yeah.
What it looks like or what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
You know, there's a bit to and fro, and then, you know, the client will then see it and it might not match their expectations, or they might have ideas that they want to chip in and go from there.
I know some people who that contemplative part would be using that as kind of like their zoning. So it could be that they're running, they're walking. It could be that they're at the gym on the bike machine, or they're running on the rolling road thing. And as they do that, they are going into a zone of contemplation that they've, because what relaxation does is it starts to disconnect you with the sensory world around you, that you're starting to let go of today and what's going on. You're starting to get into your zone, which is contemplation. And some people, business people, may well go to the gym, or maybe they've got a gym in their house or something, and then they'll ride the bike for half an hour.
Yeah.
And then they'll go and do what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So and it's the important thing. We've linked together, partly because of Buddhist practice, but partly because of the way we're selling mindfulness in the West, is that you don't have to meditate to be mindful.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a really important thing. You can be aware of who you are and be conscious of the effect of who you are and be present to yourself without meditating, but meditation helps.
Cool.
Okay. So if we're coming down the tunnel, we've got relaxation.
Through the Birkenhead tunnel. Yeah.
Yeah. Then we've got contemplation. The next bit is concentration. And when you get into concentration, you're starting to look at what is the meditation technique, the vehicle that people are using. So some people will be using breath focus, body focus. Some people will be using mantras or sounds. Some people use visual techniques where they haven't even closed their eyes. So whereas the word mantra means a repeated sound in your head, or a verse, some people use a yantra, which is usually a round design that pulls your eyes in. And so they're very often colourful, but it makes you focus into the centre of the yantra or a mandala. So that you start to get into a state of concentration. Some people can concentrate on the flame of a candle.
Mm.
Yeah, and when you use Headspace and stuff like that, Andy will say to you things like, "Okay, sit down, do this," and you might just need to defocus your eyes. He won't say close your eyes, because some people like to just defocus, so that the world around them has just kind of become blurred, but they don't like to close their eyes. It depends on the person. And when you use that yantra kind of meditation technique where you're focusing on something, you defocus on the flame of the candle. You know, maybe it's a dark room with the candle and the flame is just there. I suppose it's a bit like when you sit down and you stare into the logs of the fire, and you start to lose yourself.
Oh, yeah, I was just thinking, I was doing that the other night. Got the wood-burning stove going because it got a bit chilly for a few days, and which is unusual for winter, 2015-16. But yeah, it's just something about that flickering and the glow of the stove. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
Get lost in it.
I love to sit by the fire For me to be in the process of meditation, going down to meditation, I have to close my eyes. I mean, for me, it's a habit. My relaxation is what was called a composure when I started meditating. So you go through your body, you relax all your tensions, then you start to contemplate, and you're contemplating body, breath, whatever, emotion, and then coming down to concentration. Well, I've done things like transcendental meditation, which involve a sound in your head that you're using. Don't say it out loud.
Yep.
You're using an internal mantra. But most of my work has been what these days would be called Vipassana, which is like breath focus, body focus kind of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which takes you to meditation. And meditation is a space when you go into a meditative space where you've transcended time and you've transcended identity. And the weird thing is that when you go into a real state of meditation, you're in a void, which is outside of time and space. That as soon as you become aware of the fact that you're in that void, you come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the awareness takes you out.
Right.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing, the nearest I could get to it, to explain it without talking about meditation, would be if you read a book and you got so engrossed in the book that you're turning the page, it's a real page turn, it's an amazing book, and suddenly a couple of hours has lapsed and you haven't realised because you've been so engrossed in the book.
Yeah.
Well, there's times when I can do an hour's meditation and my gong goes to take me into meditation and I'm just getting into it and the gong goes and it's finished and like an hour's gone. And I think, where's that gone? Yeah, because when you go into that void, you're outside of time and space.
Cool.
It's really odd. And you can only really experience it if you're in it, because I'm talking about it, but I can't describe it.
Have you ever had an experience where the opposite, and like an hour has passed, but you feel like you've lived a whole life for?
If you've got real busy head on, and maybe there's stuff that's disturbing you that you can't shift, then that hour can be interminable. It's like it goes on forever. But there are techniques to overcome that, and indeed using mantric techniques is a way of, when you've got really, really busy mind, that won't shut up, by using a mantra. It's a bit like doing that patting your head and rubbing your belly stuff, when you get both things going, that even the most distressing things can begin to diminish.
Mm.
Yeah, some people are able to use the focus of concentration on whatever the difficulty is to dissolve it. Some
cool.
people need to use a sound. It's just different techniques people use.
Okay. You going to say something?
No. Okay.
You sure?
Yeah.
Looking into the benefits of mindfulness, before the benefits, there's quite some of the things I'll link to in the show notes in terms of NHS advice for mindfulness. Like the NHS is a big organisation, and of course, it's something that we hear this word everywhere, and there's actually a website called the mindfulnessinitiative.org.uk.
Yeah.
And that's where we can find the government report.
Well, the government have realised the power of mindfulness. And from their point of view, I suspect a lot of it is financial, is that NICE recommend mindfulness because if people use mindfulness, they reduce medication and sometimes eliminate medication altogether.
Yes. Well, this is quite, on the face of it, a dullish document that you can get. Deep within the website, it's got executive summaries and all that stuff, but it splits the recommendations into kind of areas, health, you know, how it can help benefit the health service,
yeah,
education, you know, getting into the little ones of tomorrow or the big ones of tomorrow, workplace and criminal justice system.
Yeah,
so it's quite amazing that all this stuff is starting to click into.
You can go on YouTube and...
I do it every day. I do it far more than I should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you go into the Vipassana meditation bits, there are documentaries there of how Vipassana has been used in prisons. And when you start to get people being mindful, the prisoners, the inmates being mindful, not only do you improve their conditions emotionally and the potential for them to reoffend, but you also change the whole atmosphere of the prison, and you reduce violence and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Fascinating. One of the things I searched in Google before we went on air was just, you know, how mindfulness can help. And one of the first articles in the news bit of Google which I'll link to. And it's quite a small strand of how it can help, but it just shows it all the myriad of ways that it can improve. Is its help in tackling childhood obesity?
Yep.
Because kids become more aware of what's going on around them rather than,
yep,
I've got nothing to do, I'm hungry, that kind of thing, you know, which is pretty fascinating, really.
If you look at the idea of sati, which you have to be careful which language you go to, because if you go to sati in Sanskrit, it's to do with wives jumping onto the funeral pyres of their burning husbands, which isn't what we mean. But in Pali, sati means to remember. And the extent of that is that to act rightly or to act righteously is called dharma.
Mm.
Because dharma acknowledges that there's a consequence to what we do. And
right,
and the way that we act creates karma, which is the consequence of our actions. So to act dharmically is to act righteously and to act in the right way. But to act rightfully, you have to be live in a world of awareness. You've got to be awareness of who you are, what you are, how you interact, and the consequences of your actions, how they affect other people.
Yep.
Most of us are wandering around in our own bubbles, bumping into each other and creating problematic karmas, you know, bad karma.
Yep.
Man, as opposed to good karma. Well, if you act righteously and you act dharmically so that you're doing the best that you can, you minimize any negative karmas that you create. That's the idea. So that sense of being in a state of awareness. So I don't know whether this makes sense. There's a guy called Rupert Gethin who translates a lot of this stuff. One of the translations is that sati should be understood as what allows awareness of the full range and extent of dharmas. That is what we do. It's the awareness of the relationship to things and hence an awareness of their relative values. It's like being aware of how we interact with the world and how we value it, how we treat it. And so that we get into this world where we are, the idea is that we are all one and that we all work together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. There's a Huffington Post article which I'll link to, and I'm going to go through a few of these now. One of them I think is pretty interesting. It's got the benefits of mindfulness. It's 20 points. One of them, number four for some reason, it could help our troops. And it says the US Marine Corps is in the process of seeing how mindfulness meditation training can improve troops' performance and ability to handle stress and recover from stress. Now, I find that interesting. It's talking about the military making a more efficient killer.
It's interesting.
I wonder if it would help in the sense of, you know, a guy has got his sniper rifle target on someone and all of a sudden this mindfulness training comes into play. And he thinks, no, I'm not going to pull the trigger.
I'm not going to
do it, you know.
And that's being that awareness of the consequence of action, isn't it?
So you wouldn't, on the flip side as well, you know, you wonder if the people that are dishing out the orders higher up the chain, are they getting the mindfulness training as well, right the way up to government level, politicians, presidents,
is
prime
Obama,
ministers? So, yeah. Are they getting mindfulness training? So, I mean, Obama's, I mean, he's made some pretty tough decisions in terms of military, you know, the assassination of Osama bin Laden, excuse me. Tough call, man. You know, it made him this popular decision, but not, you know, in my view, a good call, really, because, you know, we need the guy alive. He needed to be in a court of law, really, you know, because otherwise we're no better than they are.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
But yeah, this mindfulness is trickling down from the very top, rather than something that politicians are saying, all you people out there.
But I think that is a generalized problem at government level, but in any organization, is that the guys at the top usually think we're all right, we're okay. Mm-hmm. It's them down there that need to change. And they seek to change society or the company, the organization, from the bottom up, and it doesn't work. You can only ever change things from the top down.
It's the real key decision makers that need the training.
Yeah, and if we don't change from the top down, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me just say this as a way of maybe understanding mindfulness, is that inside of us, any of us, there's a thinking self, a feeling self, and a doing self. So I think things, I feel things, I do things. And very often the thinking and the feeling bits argue with each other. What are you doing that for? I don't know. Why are you doing that? I don't know. You know you should be doing this. I know. So you get this kind of argument between thinking and feeling, which affects what we do. And that's usually the triangle that people work in. So things like CBT says what you think affects what you feel and then affects what you do.
Yep.
Yeah. When you use mindfulness, there's a point above that, which is the observer self. I can observe what I think, I can observe what I feel, and I can observe what I do.
Yeah.
Now, if I get to that point through mindfulness practice, whether it's meditation or whether it's regularly living in that state of self-awareness, and I become aware of my thoughts, my feelings and my actions, it doesn't matter what my problems are, whether I'm a drug taker, whether I'm obese, whether I'm an angry bugger, it doesn't matter what it is. If I can observe it, I get to a point where I can make a choice. Do I want to do that or do I want to do this? But I have to separate out from getting bogged down in my thinking and feeling, which is why the images in mindfulness are usually like Andy uses the motorway. I'm sat on a bank. That's the I self watching the river of life. That's my thoughts and feelings and actions all flowing by.
Yeah.
Yeah. And other people's thoughts, feelings, and actions all flowing by in the river. Yeah. Now, my choices are I can either decide to get in the water and swim with all my emotions and get washed away, or I can sit as an observer and make decisions about what I'm going to do about my thoughts and my feelings.
What if the banks burst because of too much rainwater up?
Then you're stuffed. That happens, you know, like the water of life rushes down the river, you know, circumstances come, and however much I want to be mindful, I get washed away in the river. Yeah, and then, you know, life goes up in the air for a while. So then I've
got to... grab onto a tree and just...
Yeah, and then swim to the bank, mm-hmm. climb out, dry yourself off, find somewhere to sit and start all over again.
I saw The Revenant last week.
What's that?
It's the Leonardo DiCaprio movie.
Oh, right. Is that where he's out in the...
18th century America.
Yeah, yeah.
Bear attack and...
Yeah.
It's amazing. Pretty intense, full on. But yeah, I just that guy had the worst 2 days in history. kept on clinging to life, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Overcame. It's amazing what people do. You remember the chap who got stuck in the gorge and had to cut his own arm off?
Oh, yeah.
To get out. You
it's
know,
that. Movie, 127 Hours, is it?
Yeah.
Danny Boyle movie.
But to be aware, to have that level of awareness and mindfulness, to be able to separate out from your emotions, to be able to consciously do something like that and survive.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a hell of an act, as opposed to just sitting there going into an emotional panic and thinking, I'm going to die, and you do.
Yeah, well, we haven't really got time to go through many more of these on the list, but some really interesting ones in terms of it helps turn down the volume knob for your brain. It makes music sound better. It's quite an eclectic list of...
But that's what I mean about if you think about that principle of thinking self, feeling self and doing self is where we live. If we can adopt the higher self, the observer self, which is what happens in mindfulness or meditation, then all those things happen. It doesn't matter what those things are. The food that you eat tastes better because you're actually eating it with your awareness.
Yeah, for some reason, 12 on the list is it makes you a better person. Not sure why that's not like number one. But yeah, it could help your doctor be better at his or her job. I'm guessing that's because you've got a better awareness of your body and what's going on and you can describe things better. And
one of the things that I guess that we do have to consider because of what you just said about the armed forces is if mindfulness can make you a better soldier, are we actually saying, because I think this is probably the case, but I have no way of proving it, that the whole system is neutral?
Mm.
Yeah, and that the issues of goodness and badness are the issues that we put values on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because one of my teachers once, when I was saying to him, you know, what makes a good person, and he said, someone is getting better at it.
Uh-huh.
So if it was, you know, if you're a teacher, well, if you're getting better at it, you're going to be a pretty good teacher.
Right.
And if you're always getting better at what you do, from whatever point you start, in the end, you're going to be pretty good.
Mm.
Yeah.
Way back when we did a podcast about us all being teachers, really, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm guessing it makes us all better teachers.
If we're mindful.
Yeah.
And awareness.
Mm.
Yeah. So just remember that. You can be mindful without meditation.
Yeah.
But with meditation, you can't avoid being mindful.
Okay.
Yeah.
I need to hop on that meditation bandwagon.
We'll get you there one day.
Resource?
One of the resources that I think is worth investigating, because I've only just started investigating it, so I'm a greenhorn on it, and I'd be interested in anyone else's experience of it,
yep.
is that there's a new app that's come out that I downloaded yesterday, and I need to play with it, called Mind Pilot.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a mindfulness app. It feels like it might a little bit be in competition with Headspace.
Okay.
But it's taking a different approach. It's like taking you on a mindfulness course rather than teaching you to meditate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that the one you were playing before we went on air?
Yeah, I was just playing around with it. But I'm going to play with that over the next week.
Mm.
I'll report back next week.
But the initial findings that you've seen seem to look pretty good.
It's made well, and it seems to be easy to operate. But it's one of those things, like all these apps are, where you start off doing the free bit.
Yeah.
And then when you want the next bit, it's like, okay, we need your dosh now. It's like the in-app purchases stuff.
Mindfulness, Headspace, you know, looks like it's turned into quite a beast. I mean, they've got probably hundreds of employees now and
yeah.
big bills to pay, but
yeah.
hey, man, it's cool. They've made real good progress.
Yeah, and it's amazing results. I mean, the amount of people that I get to use it is huge.
Yeah.
I'm sure that Andy should be paying us commission by now.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Get us over to his office in Santa Monica as well.
Yeah.
Give us a call, Andy. I'm going to recommend an app called Way of Life, which I stumbled across about a week ago, which I'm just starting to use, but looks really cool. Came highly recommended from a good source. It's a habit tracking app, which there are loads of them out there. But this one looks, a bit more straightforward, a bit more like you could get it into your daily routine easier. So you can do it for tracking all sorts, whether you want to, I don't know, increase your water intake in a day, or you want to track your meditation, maybe you want to give up fizzy drinks, something like that. Mm-hmm. And it makes it really easy to set up these habits, whether you've done it, you haven't done it. You want to skip it for the day, and you can track it over time and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's a pretty, pretty cool app. So looks like that team doing some good work.
Yep.
So I will link to it in our notes.
Sounds good.
All right, cool.
Yep.
I'm not sure what we're talking about next week. We haven't.
I have an ask.
An ask, yeah.
Someone's asked me to talk about psychosis.
Ooh.
And psychopaths.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is a fascinating area. And having made the request, or someone asked me, I went on to Full Documentary, and I've been looking at some of the documentaries on psychosis, and they are fascinating.
Actually read an article on Quora.com about, it came up on my newsfeed, about some therapists or, I don't know, guys that do things you do. They'd researched 300... films from the last 100 years which have psychopaths in them, and they kind of ranked the most realistic psychopaths, the most interesting, the ones that were not realistic at all, of which Hannibal Lecter was in the top three, like not realistic.
Yeah.
People that smart, that intelligent, that sophisticated, and the way that he spoke don't tend to be psychopaths. He was a good character in a film. I'll send you see what you think. Whereas I think top of the list was the guy from No Country for Old Men. Don't know if you've seen that one. Coen Brothers movie. Shiger is his character's name, but he's a pretty cool, calm psychopath.
The thing that bothers me from a society point of view, and the reason that this request came about, is because we know that 30% of people are on the psychopathic spectrum, but there aren't that many that are in psychiatric services, prison services, or the obvious places like army, police force, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And the missing psychopaths turn out to be managers in organisations, mainly public sector.
Blimey.
And that's where the big issue is. So a lot of what I want to look at next week is how do you deal with a psychopath?
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, let's do it. There's got to be some good movie resources we can link to in that one.
Yeah.
Or I will. Right, okay. Livingthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links that we've just discussed, and lots of other stuff besides on the website. Sign up to our email list for free meditation files. and to be notified about this podcast.
Yep.
On day of release, straight away, be the first. Be the first. People love being the first to see things and hear things for some reason. I don't know why. And yeah, be good to each other.
And you.
Sure. You take it easy, all right?
Yeah, you be good to me.
I will, always. See you later.
See you. Bye.
Bye.